ABOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Danny V debut EP release on Thursday, April 26th from 8:30 to 11 p.m. at Mississippi Pizza in Portland. Singer-songwriter and musician Danny V is throwing his debut EP release party. Also performing will be Salvatore Manalo and Kea on the Mountain. Again, that's the Danny V debut EP release on Thursday, April 26th from 8:30 to 11 p.m. at Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I did it in my childhood, you know, kicking that dirt. And mile 17 to the evergreens, and damn sure do you look good, I'll tell you now.
Love this woman who knows me not. Of Peruvian origin by way of the plantation, where the sun is ornamental and the heat distilling, where bananas are golden and this woman beautiful. This woman of Peru, I love her. A humble woman with olive-colored skin, soft like sheep's wool tended from lamb, a body shaped by toil traced in time, eyes the innocence of tomorrow, with hope only for today. I love her. I see this woman of Peru, whose hands are as firm as the banana leaf, her heart sweeter than the sweetest sunset, a smile brighter than the brightest day, her tears reminiscent of tender tulips. This woman of Peru, I love her. When the rain falls, she laughs. She finds time to dance, to twirl in the hot shower. The brown clay softens her feet. I look and to myself laugh. My heart beats the more for her. She is me and I am her. She doesn't know it. This woman of Peru, me not. I love her.
You are listening to Talking Earth. This is Patrick Bocard. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 on your FM dial. And I have the good fortune to be in the studio tonight with our poetic guest, Emmett Weefall, who's the author of 5 books of poetry. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, correct. 5.
And, you have also released 3?
4.
4 CDs.
4 lyrical CDs with music, yeah.
Which we are probably going to concentrate on a little more, so it'll be a little more of the... would you describe... most of the backing for your CDs is jazz, wouldn't you describe it like that, or is that...
Jazz, blues, and then some of it is... like Peruvian that was just played. That was the incredible Ramsey Imbick on piano. He was the band leader for the Pointer Sisters. And that the piano music is originally his. We did that together in the studio. So it's a mixture, a little bit of new age, a little bit of jazz, blues. There's a tinge of gospel and a couple stuff, but it's a wide variety of stuff. Good swath.
Good swath of influences that are very similar to your poetry in a lot of ways.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
Now I'm trying to think of a segue and I'm not coming up with one. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
Do you want to just go back to Them Poetry Blues to the next?
Yeah, you want me to talk a little bit about it? Them Poetry Blues is, it's the fourth album I've done. The producer is Noah Peterson, saxophonist. It's his record label, Peterson Entertainment. And we went into the studio. And the music that people will hear tonight, these are poems. This is not rap or any other kind of genre. These were poems that were written first and then later subsequently put to music. And Them Poetry Blues is a variety of jazz sounds, some blues sounds, and just some ordinary kind of pop sounds. And it's a fabulous album. It's got quite a few cuts on it. But one day I wrote a piece that you're going to play. It's called Alfie. Alfie. And it's the old Michael Caine played in that great movie called Alfie. And I said, well, why'd you write about that? And I just love the name Alfie. And it tells a story of two people who've aged. And we'll let the audience judge.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll be back right after
Alfie.
Alfie.
Linger near Alfie. Baby blue hummingbirds fly by Alfie. Crooked chalk lines, Alfie. Ought to put that scotch down, Alfie. I'm too old to hopscotch, Alfie. Our flag is beyond half staff, Alfie. Serendipity is setting in, Alfie. I still love you, Alfie. Old souls linger near, Alfie. Baby blue hummingbirds fly by, Alfie. Crooked chalk lines, Alfie. Ought to put down that scotch, Alfie. I'm too old to hopscotch, Alfie. Our flag is beyond half staff, Alfie. Serendipity is setting in, Alfie. I still love you, Alfie. I still love you. That's the fabulous Nathan Olson out of Salem, Oregon. That guy's a great keyboard player. I gave him the opening chords, and we just ran away with that in the recording studio. It's a beautiful cut.
You were actually performing it in the studio while, I mean, I'm sorry to out you to everyone out there, but it was next piece I might have to just secretly turn on the mic and see what happens. But
as a matter of fact, Alfie, we recorded Alfie in a bunch of those tracks on the Poetry Blues were done in one take. We just went with it. The next piece we're going to let folk hear on this album is really, really a fun piece. It's really poetic. And I think once people hear it, people tend to forget that poetry involved music way back when it first started. You know, the bards and troubadours always tell people they would travel the countryside and they would have mandolins and, you know, they would recite verse and sometimes, you know, play when they recite that verse. And we've lost a lot of that today. You know, rap is a derivative of that. I just think with rap, there's a lot of rhyme. You know, the people are turning a lot of rhyme, but...
Well, some of it's about the beat. I mean, I'm kind of a little more partial to hip hop, although I grew up a metalhead.
Okay.
And then I got into indie rock and I work at a record store. So I'm going to. Yeah, sorry.
No, it's all right.
You're correct in that. Even before the Troubadours, it was called lyric poetry for a reason.
True. Right.
And a lot of what Homer was doing, which was before Sappho. Mm-hmm. And there were people before them that were kind of obscure and. And I'm sure I don't know if we know who wrote Gilgamesh, but that probably wasn't just, that was probably sung. So it goes way back.
And you know, the other thing I try to tell people too, is that, you know, when you're reciting like that, and you're trying to do it without a lot of rhyme or any rhyme at all, but still have a meter, I've got to go from A to Z. And I've got to keep that in time. I'm technically a bird on a wire because I can't elongate a note. You know, I can't make, you know what I mean?
So are you all about scansion?
You have to be.
Okay.
You literally have to be.
I have to. I'm kind of a neophyte with scansion a little bit.
And
I've heard it doesn't take that long to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but.
Well, you know, a lot of, you want to know on easy stuff to, Shakespeare's sonnets are very easy because they usually have a 10-syllable line, you know, and like, for example, from Shakespeare, her father loved me, often invited me, still questioned me the story of my life from year to year. I ran it through. I could literally take that and you give me a meter and I could actually stick that soliloquy in that meter and you'd swear, you know, Shakespeare was my boy.
Yeah, it's a blank verse.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff is in English is written that way, whereas when it comes to other languages, it's kind of, you have different rhythms.
Oh, but, absolutely.
But
this idea of being a bird on a wire, though, you know, it's like, boy, if you don't have those words prepared to go where they need to go, it's going to be noticeable to everybody.
Oh, in the studio?
Live, too.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, that is true. And that's, you know, slam poets, they have to you're not allowed. I mean, having a piece of paper in your hand is a prop.
Well,
it's,
you
not
know,
allowed anymore.
Sometimes some slams will allow you to read from paper, but when you get into serious slams, you can't use paper. That's a prop.
No, it's
I got disqualified my very first slam contest. Because I recited a poem to one of the gals in the audience, and there was this big hubbub. I killed it, smoked it. But afterwards, I saw this hubbub, and they were trying to decide whether or not that was a disqualification. Oh. So my first slam competition, I got disqualified.
I guess I won't gripe about slam, but I do know, like, from the when I was a timekeeper at the Nationals, they can be very, very competitive.
Oh, yeah. And you're 3 minutes, you better
yeah,
land that.
3 minutes, with English, 3 minutes, 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You have the 10-second grace period, and there is the other team with their timer behind me telling me, wait, he went over, right? And I'm like, yeah, 3/100ths of a second.
But Patrick, think about this. I have a poem. I have a poem that I wrote. Those 3 minutes in a slam are the purest form of free speech that there is. And I always tell, you know, slam poets that if you get an opportunity to stand on that stage with a mic in front of you and you get 3 minutes, don't waste those 3 minutes.
No.
It's the purest form of free speech there is.
I also have to say, having visited Nurikin Cafe when they were, and this is back in 90s, and they were, one, I competed in a poetry slam, it didn't do that bad. I actually did better than I do in Portland, which is funny. But they don't have a time limit.
Oh, really?
They did. Well, they didn't back then.
Oh, wow.
You know, they just kept going and going. They would have a time limit when they got to the Nationals, but not,
My only concern with slam, I got a couple of concerns with slam, and I know some great, phenomenal slam poets, but I just don't like this idea of trying to one-up the other person. You know, if the poem stands on its merit, if the spoken word stands on its merit, good. But when you're trying to outdo the other person, and then, you know, sometimes I think in slam poetry, the meter sounds the same, the way people deliver it.
People imitate other people who do well, unfortunately. That's an issue. But I don't know if that really, I haven't been to a Nationals in a long time, so I don't know. I think my main, I don't really have much of an issue. I enjoy it. My only issue was I had the worst score in Portland history for a long time, and I don't know if anyone beat it.
You can get your feelings hurt really quick, you know, if you don't really, really bring it.
I think I'm over that now.
but I really want to plug the Portland Poetry Slam.
We should.
Those folks are phenomenal, man. I've got some great poets I know, and it wouldn't be fair for me to call a name because then I'd not call somebody else's name I should. But I'm telling you, if you really want to go high-quality, jaw-dropping poetry. And I want to put a plug in for a guy out of Seattle named Robert Lashley. I think Robert Lashley is probably the Walt Whitman of poetry in the Northwest. He is absolutely brilliant. But I've got this cut off Them Poetry Blues called That's What I'm Gonna Do. And I think it'd be a fun little cut. It's a poem, but put to music.
Okay, here we go.
I'm gonna fry me some chicken. I'm gonna fry me some finger-licking chicken. I know they slim pickin', but still, I'm gonna fry me some chicken. Now that's what I'm gonna do, just like Big Mama Sue. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna eat me some watermelon. I'm gonna eat me some sweet watermelon. Boy, I'm gonna have me some fun, 'cause I'm gonna eat me some watermelon. Now that's what I'm gonna do, just like Big Mama Sue. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna drink me some liquor. I'm gonna drink me some good old corn liquor. Now don't y'all start to whisper, 'cause I'm gonna drink me some liquor. Now that's what I'm gonna do, just like Granddaddy Lou. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna buy me a pie. I'm gonna buy me a sweet potato pie. Man, I ain't gonna lie. Why? I'm gonna buy me a pie. Now that's what I'm gonna do, just like Granddaddy Lou. I'm gonna buy me a pie.
It's a great track. I like it. It's a lot of fun.
I love that organ.
Yeah, that's Louis Payne, Boston B3 Hammond Organ Hall of Fame. From music, the guy is just incredible. Nobody plays a B3 Hammond better than he does. On bass, you've got Jim Miller. Jim Miller recently, he passed away a couple years ago. He played with Ella Fitzgerald, Johnny Cash. You got Peter Damon. He's a legend, very heavily involved with the Waterfront Blues. He's on guitar. You got Noah Peterson. He's playing sax on this album. Of course, you got me on vocals, Jim Miller again on bass. And I had the privilege of recording Miss Janice Scroggins. I think my album was the last album she played on.
Wow.
Legend on this album. Phenomenal musicians. Yeah. Good stuff. I was really fortunate to get them to come in the studio and put this together. This did really well. It did really well in the United States. It did really well in Europe. And it did a little bit in South America, too. But I was really proud of it. Good work. And then I just want to set up this next piece. It's called Mississippi Mixed Girl. And this is about North Mississippi and Portland, but I did a playoff, the great state of Mississippi. And it deals with the racial divide, even among people of color. The challenge between a dark-skinned person and a light-skinned black person. And this tells that story, and there's pain in it, of rejection. So anyway, it's called Mississippi Mixed Girl. I've been to Mississippi, not the Mississippi that precedes me, nor the great state of Mississippi, but North Mississippi, the Mississippi that crosses North Skidmore and Fremont Streets, that Mississippi. There I met this mixed girl. More than once I met this mixed girl who liked black boys. Me? I was as black can be. That's why she really, really liked me when we hung out on North Mississippi in the inner city. Mixed girl had a white mama. She too really, really liked me. Her daddy was black like me. He too was as black can be. On North Mississippi, where I hung out with mixed girls between North Skidmore and Fremont Streets. Her mama thought of me dearly. Her daddy, the epitome of insincerity, because her mama used to like black boys too. Black boys that look like me. Where mixed girl and I hung out, because I was as black can be, on North Mississippi. Mixed girl could really shake her pants. Me and mixed girl had no shame. And mixed girl played the game until one day her daddy called me out my name, because I was as black can be, even though he too was as black as me. When mixed girl hung out with me, and that brought an end to everything.
Because mixed girl's daddy, who too was black can be, didn't want her liking a black boy like me, who was as black can be. When mixed girl and I hung out on North Mississippi. So I tell everybody, I've been to Mississippi.
You know, that piece is an example of, you know, sometimes intercultural turmoil. But the beautiful thing to me about poetry is how poetry can transcend culture. I'm an African-American poet, Patrick, but I can be an Irish boy in love with Irish girls. I can go back to the antebellum period in slavery. I can write about, I have a poem called Two, and it's dealing with an emperor in China. You know, it's really sad to me that people will lock themselves into a particular genre of poetry to the exclusion of other cultural references.
That happens with a lot of writers. That isn't just, I mean, I'm wearing a Lovecraft shirt, and he kind of got locked into, well, he had his own biases and locked himself into a lot of stuff, but also just, there are people who kind of get thrown into a, sometimes they do it themselves and they only write a specific kind of work, or they just get viewed by critics or an audience that they only want a specific kind of work.
Yeah. Anyway, I just, you know, as an African American, it's just great that I can journey into all these different worlds. And if you're going to journey them, you better make sure you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's called. Yeah, you got to do research, and you got to
do research.
You might want to talk to people.
you don't want to offend anybody.
Well, it's hard to. Well, writing about past ages can be a little.
Now you got to do your research work. You know, I check every word. I've even asked folks to make sure that, you know, I had somebody criticize a line that I wrote in a poem. You know, I'd even drink your bath water from Pretty Black Girl. And I wrote, it's the only bad review I ever got, the only one I've ever got. And I told the guy, if you had to ask me, that was a statement that Flip Wilson used to make in Sanford and Son about Lena Horne. You know, if you ask me, I will tell you where that came from.
But he didn't know where it came from.
He didn't know where it came from. But, you know, I want to dedicate something to the late, great Miss Janice Scroggins, phenomenal pianist, just gifted out of this world. She was nominated for a Grammy. She could play Scott Joplin style music. She could play an individual rhythm in each one hand. And this is called Miss Janice Scroggins and her 88 Keys. Some of them black, some of them white. 88 keys are from left to right. Oh, what joy, oh, what delight. 88 keys are gonna get played tonight. You see, the club is full and every seat is filled. Does anyone know how the legend feels? The lights are low and the spirit's bright. Only God knows what genius has in store tonight. All right, all right. It's time to get real. Ladies and gentlemen, how do you feel? Welcome to the stage and welcome with me, Miss Janice Scroggins and her 88 keys. Silky smooth and light as a feather. She opens with Oscar Peterson, who's listening from heaven.